Welcome, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. One of the supreme ironies of the government shutdown is that story dominated the headlines and eclipsed what would have been the biggest story of the past 3 weeks, the disastrous digital rollout of the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare. It's ironic because the people who shuttered federal services said they were doing it to protest the ACA, the centerpiece of which debuted on October 1st. Well, there is silence no more. The electronic failure of the ACA has been grabbing headlines all week. Congress held hearings to look into why the exchanges weren't ready for business when they debuted. Did you get the news and information you needed to understand this complicated new system? What kind of coverage do you want to see and hear about Obamacare as its final provisions are now becoming a reality? Well, joining us to discuss all of this, we've got Trudy Lieberman, who's a contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review, where she critiques press coverage of health care. Hi, Trudy.
Hi.
And Charles Ornstein is a senior reporter with ProPublica. He's a board president of the Association of Healthcare Journalists. Hi, Charles.
Good to be with you. I'm past president, but finished my term. Yes.
Okay. So we always start Fridays out by giving kudos to a journalist or a team who did a great job this week. Why don't we start with you, Trudy? What piece of reporting caught your attention?
My shout-out for this week is Lindy Washburn of the Bergen Record in New Jersey, and I'm doing my week four wrap-up, finishing up this afternoon. And she did an outstanding story on the problems of the narrow networks that people are just bumping into. We've heard a great deal about how cheap some of these premiums in the exchanges are going to be for younger people, and indeed that they will be relatively cheap compared to what insurance usually costs in the U.S., but they come with a big catch. And one of the catches that they have is that the networks of providers that are available for people to use are very limited. And in some cases, they're more limited than I would ever have imagined. I mean, we're used to narrow networks because we've all known about HMOs for about 20 years. But in this case, they're quite narrow. And so Lindy really got down and dug into what was going on in New Jersey and talked a lot about this. And she shared with me a letter that she got from one of her readers who had bumped into this, but the reader had also bumped into another problem, and that was the very high coinsurance, which is a percentage of a bill you have to pay. And the woman finally said, yeah, I'm going to be paying more money, and I've got this coinsurance, so I don't see that there's anything in this for me. And so it was this frustration of people sort of, if they could get through on the website, it was what they were going to find at the other end.
Yeah, and I think we'll be looking into, as people are finding coverage or finding that they're going to lose their current policies, what's actually offered as the website starts working better. How about you, Charles? What did you see this week that you thought was well done?
Well, I felt like we're going to spend a lot of time talking about healthcare today, so I chose a slightly different piece, one by Gary Fields in the Wall Street Journal, which is about the lives of the mentally ill and police colliding. And it focused on the story of Tony La Russa, who responded to a call and shot to death a mentally ill man who was threatening him, and how this had a profound effect on Officer La Russa's life, and how he himself has a brother who has bipolar, who is bipolar, and how he thought about, could this have been his brother that another police officer was going to shoot at, and just the issues of the mentally ill and the calls that increasingly are coming into police to deal with mentally ill who are acting out. And when police encounter a situation like that, how are they supposed to deal with this, and how it affects them personally? It was a moving piece and one I thought raised really important issues, and I was glad to read it.
Well, thanks for that, and we'll put articles at yourcallradio.org. You can also post articles that you think are particularly good. So, Charles, let's move to the Affordable Care Act and these government exchanges, particularly healthcare.gov. You had your own problems accessing the site. Can you kind of drill down, how significant is it, and what are the fundamental problems with the website, Charles?
I think that the main issue, well, first, it's important for listeners to understand that there is no single site in which all enrollments across the country takes place. You have 14 states plus the District of Columbia that are running their own enrollment. So in California, you would go to the website for Covered California and you'd enroll there, and you wouldn't have to deal with healthcare.gov if you didn't want to. But for 36 states, the residents of those states, if they want to sign up for a plan, would go to healthcare.gov. And the problem is that the site wasn't ready for prime time on October 1st. In fact, within minutes of going up, it almost went down. And it was inundated with traffic, but also there were serious flaws in the design. There were serious flaws in the software. There were serious flaws in the back end and the front end. And so people couldn't set up accounts. They weren't able to verify their identities. They weren't able to select plans. And that's still a problem that's going on to this day. So it basically every step of the way, this was an untested site. And my biggest problem was not that, you know, there were problems with the site. It was that consumers who were going to the site had no indication that there were problems. In fact, you saw officials from, you know, Barack Obama on down encouraging people on the first day to go and get covered and go to the site, and the site just simply wasn't ready for it. And so if there's the biggest criticism, it's that they weren't telling people actually wait to sign up. They were encouraging people to go to a site that they knew didn't work, and that created even more of a bottleneck.
I'm having a really hard time understanding how this could have been bungled so badly, since this is the signature political achievement of this administration. It's this huge deal. How is it that they hadn't tested this? I just really am having a hard time understanding it. Do you understand?
Well, I think what happened is that, and you saw this yesterday at the House Energy and Commerce Committee hearing, that the contractors who were responsible for this said that they each had tested their own individual components, but nobody, and particularly the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is the government agency that oversees the overall site, did a top-to-bottom analysis, did any sort of testing. The testing that they did a few days before it went live, it failed the testing, and it still went live. So I think the people who were in charge didn't have technological backgrounds. The people who had technological backgrounds probably weren't empowered to speak up or slow this process. People said what they thought their bosses wanted to hear, but ultimately, this is not a case where you operate in a vacuum. You know, when you turn the switch on, if it doesn't work, the feedback is going to be immediate, and indeed it was immediate. And it's a hole that they're now trying to dig themselves out of.
Will they be? Yeah, go ahead, Trudy.
Yeah, it was clear that it wasn't going to work, and it was well known to people in Washington it wasn't going to work, because I had heard this in early September from very good sources that there were serious problems with it. And I think that if the press knew, and some people probably did know or were warned that this might be a problem, we didn't see very much follow-up, if any, at all. And what I was seeing of press coverage during this sort of run-up period in September was a lot of spin from Kathleen Sebelius and her people at HHS and from the White House and the whole press apparatus at HHS. And unfortunately, the press, the media, was picking a lot of that up. And there was a piece that I did sometime before I came up to Canada, where I've been for the last 4 weeks looking at the Canadian healthcare system and talking about our own, was the willingness of the media at this point to take what she was saying and just put it in their stories. And it was always that everything is fine, you're going to get this great bargain, everything's going to be very cheap and affordable. And indeed, in Sanjay Gupta's interview with the secretary on CNN earlier in this week, she was still very much staying on message. And she had mentioned the word affordable something like 7 or 8 times throughout this somewhat brief interview. So I think there was, if the government was not really up to snuff for the task, in some ways the media wasn't either, and they were not really picking up on the clues that were there.
Interesting. Well, thanks for that. Since the rollout, I've seen a lot of interesting articles, including an editorial in today's New York Times and a piece on NPR earlier this week about how you get federal government contracts and how that contributed to this. Charles, have you seen? Can you explain some of that? And have you seen a lot of coverage of that?
Well, I think that's really one of the issues that's going to be once the site is fixed, once it's back up and running, once the back end problems are fixed. One of the sort of persistent legacies of this debacle will be the way in which the government contracts for health information technology. I think that what it's called is procurement. And what's clear is that it's a really it's a system that needs reform, and that the government is so prescriptive in terms of the specifications and places so much of a you have such preferential treatment if you are somebody who's already worked with the government, is familiar with the intricacies of government contracting. I think that you probably, this is a complicated task, right? To be sure, what they're trying to do is complex. It is merging systems that are supposed to be user-friendly on the front end with pretty complicated systems that have to verify identities and incomes on the back end. So I'm not trying to downplay the task at hand, but there's some really amazingly capable developers out here in the world. And the way the government contracts almost ensures that it's not going to get the best of the best. And I think that that is a legacy from this, that it's going to have to be explored in much more detail once they get the site back up and running.
Well, let me ask both of you a sort of insider baseball question. What, if the administration was encountering all of these problems, and if, as you say, people knew that this was going to fail, wouldn't it have been in their interest to sort of raise these questions and put it out in the media and kind of expose the problems of the system early on? They had years to do this.
Yeah, but I think it really was not in their interest to do that. And I'm thinking about the political milieu that the administration has found itself in the last month or so, with the issue over raising the debt ceiling and the Republicans' threats, and indeed they carried out their threats of closing the government down ostensibly over Obamacare. So I think that they may have reasoned that Republicans probably were going to do it anyway, and if they didn't go through with the launch, and the secretary herself has said we really had no option, we had to go through with it, because they were going to be slammed no matter whether they did or they didn't. If the they delayed it again, or I should say if they delayed it, there's been several delays of various provisions of the Affordable Care Act. And every time there's been one, there's been political hay made of whatever the delay was. And so they may have reasoned on some level that if there's going to be, you know, if we're going to have this massive delay now of the most important piece of the ACA, then that's just going to give the opposition a lot more ammunition. And so I think maybe they made a calculation here that, you know, maybe it was better to just go ahead and you know, Hail Mary pass and hope that it was going to work.
Well, I guess
I want to add
something
to what Trudy said, though, because I think this is really important. And Trudy, and I don't think we disagree on this at all, but essentially what the administration did in calculating was that it was okay to lie for political reasons. And I think, you know, that's not okay. In this case, they said they were ready to go on October 1st. They knew they were not ready to go on October 1st. There were political calculations, as you enumerated, and I think those are right. But essentially, they lied to the American people. That is not okay.
It well, seems like it's not okay, but it also strikes me,
that.
Trudy, hold on. It strikes me also as bad judgment, bad political judgment. I mean, they had political cover with the government shutdown. Why would it be better to launch something that's an utter failure than to hold off and test it?
You know, they made that calculation, unless Charlie has some insights into that. But I guess I want to say that there's also another reason it was really never came out in this whole thing, and how much this is related to the techno issues, I'm not sure. But the real reason, I think, and I've written about this, for the shutdown was not really about the Affordable Care Act. The Republicans knew that there wasn't much chance they're going to repeal this. They've tried it many times. This is just going to give them a lot more things that they might be able to talk about in the 2014 elections. The issue really was the budget, and how they're going to really deal with some of the entitlement issues. This has been an issue that's been left on the table now for several months. I've been covering both Social Security and Medicare as part of my portfolio of things. And up until April or so, maybe even a little bit later, maybe into early May, there was a lot of talk about the change CPI for Social Security and what are we going to do about Medicare, and then all of a sudden, these two issues were really not on the front burner, and they have not been all summer. So perhaps the Republicans and the advocates for changing entitlements were just sort of waiting to do this and make this an issue, knowing all along that this wasn't going to happen, but it was, you know, maybe they could force their hand on some of these other issues.
And you're listening to Your Call. That's Trudy Lieberman. She is a contributing editor with the Columbia Journalism Review. We're also speaking with Charles Ornstein, who's a senior reporter with ProPublica. This is Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we're talking about coverage of the ACA and specifically healthcare.gov. Let me invite callers to join our conversation about coverage of Obamacare so far, and particularly this week. 866-798-TALK is the number to call. It's toll-free, 866-798-8255. We'd also like to hear what your experience has been if you've tried to get onto Covered California, which is different than healthcare.gov. Let us know what that experience was like. Our number is 866-798-TALK. You can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And what do you want to know about healthcare reform? Where are you getting good information? What's missing in the coverage? Again, the number is 866-798-8255. So what do you think do you think, Trudy, that all of this attention on healthcare.gov is leaving out other issues that we should be understanding or talking about in terms of the ACA?
Well, I think clearly the issue right now is the technical problems in the website, and this is a huge issue. And I think that this will be around for a long time, that these problems are not going to be corrected, you know, overnight. And so I think the longer people experience frustration in using the site, could potentially be difficult for the law to get started and get up and running and get the required number of people that people think are necessary for this law to work. And that means that they've got to get a really good mix in this risk pool of sick people and healthy people and old people and young people, or it may not work. And it's been told to me that many of the insurance companies are really worried about this, because if they don't get this appropriate mix of people, then premiums are going to go up a whole lot next year. And so a lot of CEOs of insurance companies are saying this kind of privately and telling that to some reporters privately. And I think that that is a genuine concern, because price is everything right now, and we've been told that. And in reality, it really is to people when they make that final decision. You know, they may not worry about the co-payments and the co-insurance and hope for the best that they don't get sick. But those are the realities, and I think that the more we talk about the technical issues, and they are certainly legitimate to talk about, some of these other issues about how you actually choose policies and how you navigate the system and what do you really know are going to be obscured.
Yeah, and I hope we can talk about those. I mean, I feel like one sort of underlying potential success story going on here is that actually when you look at what's going on in the signups, there's in a number of states that are reporting the information, they're seeing actually that the majority of them are coming among people signing up for Medicaid. And that has the potential of really being a success. I mean, the Affordable Care Act calls for expanding the definition of who can qualify for Medicaid.
And so that's lower income folks who are now newly eligible for Medicaid.
That's exactly right. It used to be if you were a childless adult, you did not have much of a chance of being covered by Medicaid. Now you have a much better chance in about 25 states that have agreed to do the expansion. And some of those states are reporting a real strong interest. And so I would tend to wager, I'm curious what Trudy thinks, but that in the end analysis, you're going to see a lot more people signing up through the Medicaid portal, which is than you will through the commercial health plans.
I think that's right. And I think when we talk about Medicaid, we have to be careful about what we're saying about Medicaid. As Charlie noted, about half the states, 25 or 26, whatever the number is now, have agreed to opt into the Medicaid expansion. And this was a very important provision of the ACA that would make people eligible, allow people to be eligible for Medicaid coverage up to 138% of the federal poverty level. And so what this means, that there were people, childless adults primarily, who were not eligible in their states, who are going to be eligible now for Medicaid. And Medicaid benefits generally have been quite good. The problem with that is that for some services, dental care, for example, many providers don't want to treat Medicaid patients, and so there's been some access issues around that. But that said, the expansion of Medicaid has been will be a tremendous boon to getting more people covered.
And let me try and go, real quickly, I'd like to get a call in before the break. Let's go to Martin in Oakland. Hi, Martin. Welcome to your call.
Hi. I was just calling because there's been so much focus in the press on, you know, the technical glitches and the problems with the computer site, the website, that the fact of the sticker shock for premiums in the individual market has been almost completely overlooked. You know, in California, the premiums for individual payers have gone up from 100% to 200%. Like my plan at Kaiser was discontinued and rejiggered under the ACA, and it went from 306 to 575. And when Obama, you know, was running for president in both 2008 and 2012, he insisted first you could keep your old plan, whatever that was, mm-hmm. as an individual, and also that premiums would go down for everyone with this bigger market. And both of those things turned out to be completely untrue, you know, drastically untrue. And I don't know if that was unintentional or just malfeasance.
Let's get a response, Martin,
Charles,
we're hearing a lot about this. The New American Media has an article on about thousands of health policies canceled due to ACA change, and we're hearing this from a lot of people. So we've got about 2 minutes before the break, Charles.
So I think that one of the things going on here is that it's unquestionable that some people's premiums are going up and other people's premiums are going down. And so the idea that everybody's going to see lower premiums as a result of the Affordable Care Act is false.
But wasn't that a bit of a promise that was made?
Well, not so much. I mean, I think the promise was that everybody would get a certain level of benefits. And typically the plans where people are seeing their rates go up, it's because they are either there's one or two things going on. One is they're younger, and because they've reduced the number of tiers in which you can be charged different things based on your age, younger people are paying more. The second thing is that they've mandated a certain level of benefits, and that if you now are entitled to more benefits, that's going to cost you more whether you wanted to or not.
Go ahead.
I'm in here.
Yes.
Now or after the break. The affordable question was undoubtedly repeated over and over and over again during the run-up to Obamacare. And in fact, the Democrats had hired a pollster who told them that to use the phrase affordable quality care. And to this day, that phrase continues to be used. And what hadn't been told is that people who had policies that were not grandfathered into the law or the old policies, like the caller who couldn't keep his policy with Kaiser, those policies are brand new policies. They will have better benefits in general than the old policies, but that message has not really gotten out, and instead it is not uncommon to hear people say the same thing, that they're really not going to be able to keep what they had, even if they liked it or even if they thought it was a crappy policy and they were going to keep it. And for a number of people, those policies are not going to be affordable, depending.
Trudy, we're about to go to a break. That's Trudy Lieberman, and we're also joined by Charles Ornstein. It's our Friday Media Roundtable, and we're talking about coverage of Obamacare. I'm Holly Kernan, and you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
All of the stories that you hear recommended on today's Media Roundtable will be posted at yourcallradio.org. We also invite you to highlight the reporting that you thought was valuable this week by calling 866-798-TALK, 866-798-8255, or you can send an email, question, or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. You can also listen to past shows there and find out what's coming up next. On Monday, we're going to have a conversation with investigative journalist Max Blumenthal about his latest book, Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. How are Israeli society and politics changing? What are the implications for the future of the peace process and an unstable Middle East? That's Monday on Your Call with Matt Martin. On Tuesday, Rose will be back, and she's going to look at the foreclosure crisis in Richmond and that city's plans to use eminent domain to take over underwater mortgages. That's Tuesday on Your Call when Rosie will be back. Today, it's our weekly media roundtable. We speak with journalists about the week's news. And right after the 16-day government shutdown ended, much of media attention turned to President Obama's Affordable Care Act. And the news has not been very good. The insurance exchange website healthcare.gov has been nearly impossible to navigate or even to log on to for too many people. So what are the right questions and what stories should media be covering about the Affordable Care Act? You can join our conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-8255, with your questions about the Affordable Care Act and covered California. And if you've had an experience either getting coverage successfully or not, or having your premiums change, let us know what's happening. 866-798-8255. We're speaking with Trudy Lieberman, who's a contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review, and Charles Ornstein, who's a senior reporter with ProPublica. They both cover healthcare and have been covering the ACA quite a bit. So right before the break, Trudy, I apologize. We were talking about this idea of, oh, well, people are getting better policies now with the ACA, but many people are really dismayed to find out that they can't keep their current coverage, which was a big promise that Obama made. If you have healthcare, you're going to get to keep it. So maybe you could drill down just a little bit more as to why this is happening and what's a good answer for somebody who had affordable care and now doesn't.
I'm afraid they're going to have to, if their individual policy, if they're, you know, they don't have employer coverage, they're going to have to shop in the exchanges when they're able to do that and really look at what's available and see what they can fit in their pocketbook. But I think we need to go back a little bit and talk about the reasons I think Obama may have said that during the campaign, because I know I commented on it for CJR. And what was going on here is the people who were supportive of this kind of reform had hired these pollsters, and they had done a lot of sort of grassroots work to find out what Americans really wanted. And they found Americans were really fearful of losing what they had. Many people were satisfied with what they had. In the old days, we had very good insurance, and it was fairly low priced, and, you know, everybody was kind of happy. And they were fearful of losing that. And so one of the messages that the advocates were told to say is that, you know, we're not going to take your health care away from you. We're not going to have any kind of European-style health care system. So in that sense, you can keep what you have. That wasn't even true then, because what was going on in the employer market and is continuing to go on is that each year the employer may offer a new policy. So you may have had one coverage 1 year with employer X, but employer X that the next year has a different policy. So really, in the employer market, you really weren't getting that, and even to some extent in the individual market, because insurers were what we call closing off blocks of business, and if there were too many sick people that had the same kind of policy, they'd just try to move people to a different policy with a higher price. And so people really weren't keeping what they had, but it seemed to play very well. But the phrase that did play very well was this notion of affordable quality care. And that's what they're still using today. And I think the caller was absolutely right to kind of zoom in on those sound bites that he maybe remembers from the debate. And many of us who were covering this and sort of understand the insurance market knew that none of this, you know, was really going to materialize in this way and that people would be misled. And that's exactly what's happened.
And Charles, let me bring you into this before we get to more calls. I really do want to get to as many callers as possible. But you wrote today, what's wrong with healthcare.gov's price estimator?
Right. So this is a challenge. So until this week, the way it worked was that in order to get a price for how much you would pay for a health insurance policy, if you were in one of the 36 states covered by healthcare.gov, you actually had to go through the process of creating an account and logging in and being verified, and then you could comparison shop. So given the glitches, people couldn't even get to that point. So the administration decided to put up a tool which lets you estimate the price of your plan online, and by just entering where you live, generally your age category, and what county you live in, what state you live in. The problem is it's based on, there's two estimates, one based on a 27-year-old male, and the other is based on a 50-year-old. And so
You mean those are the only two?
So, well, they say it, the way it's worded is under 40, 49 and under and 50 and over, but the 49 and under is based on a 27-year-old. The 50 and over is based on a 50-year-old. And so if you're going there and expecting to get an estimate that's relevant to you, if you're, say, 44 or 60, this is going to be nowhere near what you're going to pay. And there's warnings all over the site saying your price may be lower if you qualify for a subsidy, but nowhere does it tell you your price may be higher. And it's very, very misleading, this new price calculation.
I heard a really good story on NPR this week that talked about how mortgage companies were able to solve this problem, the same similar situation where you have to have everything fact-checked before you eventually buy coverage, but that they had created a tool so that you could put in your approximate income and all of that and get this information.
This is obviously more complicated than you would find by going to a mortgage company, because it involves, you know, hundreds of plans across the country in thousands of counties that involve, you know, if you incorporate every age and family structure, there's a lot of different scenarios that you could come up with. But one, these insurers have to file electronic rate filings for what they'll charge in the exchanges, which is actually powers the correct side of this. And so if you take out the determining eligibility and just use the information on rates that we use for your price calculator, it's going to be a lot more accurate. I have not heard a good explanation of why that isn't possible, but what I do think it's doing is misleading folks right now when it really shouldn't be.
Well, let's hear from Drew in San Francisco. Hi, Drew. Welcome to your call.
Hi, how are you? I'm going to go ahead and put you on a different, so we have better sound. You mentioned, Holly, that it was an utter failure, and why did they proceed? And I think that now that the press has finished talking about one problem, which was the shutdown, they've got to talk about the next problem, which is Obamacare. But I will tell you, in my case, in the state of California's case, their launch of Covered California went wonderfully. And in my case, I am a 45-year-old male with a pre-existing condition, individual policyholder. Right now I pay $688 a month under my current regime. When the Affordable Care Act comes into force, for much better coverage. Right now I have a $1,500 deductible. My deductible will practically go down to zero. I'll be paying less.
Mm-hmm.
That's not with subsidy. I'm talking before subsidy.
That's great to hear, Drew.
Right.
That's wonderful.
So, but the press, like you, are focusing on the problems. But there are many, many states that have launched exchanges that have great stories like this. Where are they?
Great. We're going to talk about it. Hold on 2 seconds, Drew. Let me ask you a question. I would love to be reporting on, you know, the ACA being a wild success. Are you saying that you kind of feel like that obviously you're saying that you think the press focuses on the negative because it's a more sensational story. But do you feel like we shouldn't be talking about this? Because to me, it really does seem like a big, big flaw and something that is really worthy of coverage.
Well, of course, the problems are worthy of coverage, but it's again, the balance in the coverage. And it's also making sure that you're comparing apples and apples and oranges. You know, for example, your guests are pointing out, you know, these people calling in saying that they're losing their coverage or their coverage price is going up. Well, what was their old coverage? Because they never got sick. They didn't realize their coverage was terrible. And the new coverage they're going to get is going to be much better. So, yes, the premium is higher, but the press, particularly the press, is not going into this in detail. It's just about, you know, the higher premiums, the people losing their insurance. And nobody mentions the reason you're losing your policy is because you didn't have your old policy when, I guess it's 2010 is the cutoff, someday in 2010, you'd have your policy, but you don't hear those details. You just don't hear those details.
Well, let me throw this to the panel. Thank you very much for calling, and we're glad to hear about a positive story with Covered California, which is coveredca.gov, I think, or .org. Let me look. But go ahead, Trudy, and let me start with you, Trudy. What do you think? Is the press too negative about this? And then we'll go to Charles.
Well, I think the press has covered some of the success stories, particularly in those states that have operated their own exchanges, where they seem to be working much better. California was way ahead of the pack talking about this as soon as the law passed, and that was certainly not the case in many other states. We don't know exactly all the details of the caller's plan, and so it's really hard to say exactly what he's getting. The new policies that people have to have now or will have do contain 10 essential minimum benefits. So there will be coverage for drugs. There will be coverage for maternity care. There will be coverage for lots of things that many of the old policies did not cover. So that's a very good thing. And the stories I have seen have generally pointed out that fact, that these minimum essential benefits will be there, and people will be able to get coverage for things. Now, that doesn't mean all those coverages are created equal, and some of them may have limitations on the services, or they may make you pay high cost sharing for a particular service, such as outpatient hospital care and diagnostic tests. That's where I'm seeing a lot of these high cost sharing amounts. So I think people who believe that they are getting a better deal now, and there will be many, many people who will, they're really going to have to look very carefully at their policy, because it's not just a matter of lowering your premium. And that issue needs to be discussed. And I think that gradually I'm seeing more of that discussed in the press, but we kind of made it, in a way, a black and white issue. On the one hand, the administration's been very positive with all kinds of success stories, and on the other hand, we're hearing some serious problems here. So I think that we're seeing both.
And Charles, what are you seeing? I've seen a lot of coverage of this, very good coverage, very extensive coverage, lots of explainers, lots of specific stories, good and bad. Many states have had very successful rollouts, like Drew mentioned, with Covered California. What kinds of stories are you seeing on that?
I think there's a lot of stories that are focusing on the positives that are states like Kentucky, which have really shined. I mean, Kentucky is the number one example that's cited of a state that is getting it right, that's doing things appropriately, that is up and running, that's enrolling people. So I think that those are getting attention. I do think the predominant story right now is one about the problems of the site. The reason for that is there's a compressed time frame here to get people enrolled if they want to have coverage that begins on January 1st. And just today, the Department of Health and Human Services announced that they expect the website to be running smoothly by the end of November. And that is giving a two-week window for people who potentially will need to sign up to get coverage beginning on January 1st. So this is cutting it close. The administration has articulated that they have a goal of 7 million people to sign up by the end of March. They have a long way to get there, and I think people will judge the success of this not based on individual stories of people being able to sign up. Of course, there's going to be those, but on how many people sign up and how many people don't sign up, and on more broad-based level. But on one final point is what Drew said. What I had said before to the previous caller was some people will see their costs going up and some people will see their costs going down. And I think the two callers we've had are examples of both ends of that spectrum.
And let's go to Molly in Carmel. Hi, Molly. Welcome to your call.
Hi. Thanks a lot. Especially with your journalist from who's up in Canada, I would say this whole thing is a really good argument for single payer, personally. And isn't, who raked Halliburton across the coals for its horrible decisions and all the money wasted in Iraq? I think part of the problem is this privatization of government functions has gotten so disproportionate that we've lost a lot of expertise in actual government itself. Those are my statements. And also, what would happen if we had, for example, an Apple glitch on a rollout? If it was a private industry, would it be getting hearings in Congress?
Well, I imagine not, because it's not the government. Well, thanks for that, Molly. So she brings up, you know, single payer. This is not socialized medicine, even though it's often branded that. It's mandating buying private insurance with the idea that if you cover everybody, you spread the risk and costs theoretically go down, and then morally everybody's covered. Trudy, how is this being covered up in Canada that does have socialized medicine?
There's not much coverage in the Canadian press, but there's a ton of interest everywhere I've gone, and I've given zillions of speeches and talks and panels over the last several weeks, and there is tremendous interest in what Obamacare is. I mean, they know that there is such a thing, and they want to know how it works. And I think sometimes people have thought that what Americans are getting is a system that has a lot of equity in it and covers everybody, which is what the Canadian system does. And then when I explain what our system is in the U.S., they're kind of bewildered by it, because many of the things I'm explaining to them are really foreign to them in their system. And I think that there are areas of convergence in both of our systems, but there are fundamental differences. And I think the issue of equity is one that is standing out in my mind, as well as the treatment of Aboriginal and First Nations. There's a lot of talk in Canada now about poor quality of care for these populations, and we're not talking so much about that in the U.S. So I found those two things very different. But one thing we're finding also is that Canadians don't want the American system at all, and Americans don't want the Canadian system. So each side is kind of picking, you know, the things that they think they've heard about each other's system. So that said, there are there's a lot of interest, and I'm going to be writing a series of posts for CJR when I return to the States.
And let's go to David in Berkeley. Welcome to your call.
Oh, hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I was so happy to hear a guy like Drew call. No apologist for the system that exists, but from an optimistic point, the 35 million people that are having difficulties getting online, they might try using a different browser, as there might not be compatibility of their browser with the way it's been designed with the government. I had a similar experience with a government platform that's been around for, at least 7 years. That's USPS. And I changed browsers, and it worked instantly.
Huh. Interesting.
I tried my standard. I use an Apple. It wouldn't take it. It pretended it didn't exist. So I had to switch over also to a different operating system. And it was the newer Windows 7s and 8s.
Well, David, you bring up a really good question, which is, I mean, if you have to try that hard, if you're really motivated to get coverage because you need it, because you have health issues, then obviously you're going to figure out how to do it. But say you're somebody that the government really wants to include, which is somebody who's currently healthy, and they want those people to also be buying into this system because it's an insurance pool. Those folks are not going to jump through a zillion hurdles necessarily. Is that an issue, Charles?
Yeah, I think that the biggest concern right now that keeps people up at night is that if these delays persist, and if not only the front-end delays that you're hearing about browsers and such, but the back-end delays, meaning getting people enrolled through insurance companies. So if those persist and people, healthy people, have an impediment to signing up for plans through this, and it's mostly sick people, what the insurance companies are going to find over the course of the year is that their costs are much higher than they anticipated. And Trudy alluded to this, but what you're going to then have is that insurance companies, when they are providing their rates for 2015, they will be substantially higher than they are for 2014, under the assumption that they are covering a sicker population. And if their rates for 2015 are higher than 2014, the way that this works is that then people who are healthier will have even less of an incentive to sign up. And that's what's called an insurance death spiral.
And that's why they want this to work.
This has to work, and it has to work quickly so that you can begin not putting impediments to healthy people signing up you want to make it easy for healthy people to sign up, so it's not just the sick who are ultra-motivated who can actually sign up.
Well, let's go to Clark in Palo Alto, who says that he's having problems with the site. Hi, Clark.
Hi. I'm well covered. I'm a retired person, and I have good coverage. But I have a friend who needs coverage, but is kind of shy about working on a computer, so I decided that I would try to go on. And, I entered an account and everything, and having done the whole thing, then I could go no further. That was several days ago. Well, today I was hearing your discussion. I said, well, I'll try again.
And this is Covered CA?
Yeah, Covered California. I said I'd try again. And, you know, I made good notes of what how I had registered. They say that it's not there, that I can't log on with the name. And so it's just kind of a frustration. And as I say, I don't really need it. But I can see, as the previous caller said, that people who just don't feel like they need it, they're not going to spend any time going through this. I will take his advice of trying another browser, see if that works. But I was surprised. I expected to just breeze right in. But I've found difficulty, and I suppose other people have too.
Well, thank you so much for sharing that, Clark. And just for people to know, the website is coveredca.com. CoveredCA.com. Let's hear from more callers. Bill in San Francisco, welcome to your call.
Hi. I just want to follow up on one of your callers who said that they did have a good experience. I think it was Drew.
Drew, yeah.
In California. I signed up. You know, the first week was kind of rough, and I kind of gave up, but I came back after a week and managed to do it within, you know, a half an hour or so. And the coverage I got was quite good compared to what I did have. So I agree that there should be a little bit more focus on the individual state success stories. But what I think is the interesting question is, who's really to blame here? I mean, on the one hand, one can argue that the Republicans were absolutely right, that the federal government wasn't capable of doing this. And so the states who took the bull by the horns and did it have been very successful. So it's been kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy for those Republicans. And the poor people who don't have a Democratic-run state that is ahead of the curve are now suffering. Now, on the other hand, one can also argue that the administration should have seen this coming and that they should have done everything in their power to make sure that there was a smooth rollout for the federal system. I would give the California system an A-minus, B-plus for my experience. I know other people have had problems, but it's...
Did you sign up through Covered Cal, CA?
Yeah, Covered California, yeah.
So you had a good experience.
The first week, I tried to get on a call, and I just gave up. And I figured, it's going to be a surge, kind of looky-loos. After about 10 days, I went back on. I think I did it late in the evening. I got right on. It took me half an hour. You know, it really wasn't that big of a deal. I'm fairly computer literate. So it wasn't, but from what I've heard, the state's plans have been much more successful than the federal plan. And obviously, I mean, this is what the problem is. You have one party who wants this thing to fail.
Yeah.
And so had all the states or most of the states had their own, we'd be much more successful. That didn't happen. Unfortunately, I think blame can also be placed on the administration. They should have seen this coming.
Well, thank you, Bill. Let's go ahead and throw this to Trudy and Charles. Charles, how important is blame here, and how important is really focusing on fixing, especially given what you just said about the insurance death spiral potential, and what Bill brings up about the fact that there are so many Republicans in particular who are just completely hostile to this concept and who want it to fail?
Look, the first, second, and third priority here is to get this thing fixed. It's the law of the land. It's so many people, millions of people across this country are depending on this for health insurance, and it needs to be fixed for them. So I think that that's clear. To the second point about blame, I mean, that's going to be discussed no matter if we wanted to or not, and there's plenty of blame to go around. Certainly Republicans obstructed this in two ways. First, in trying to do everything that they could to discourage people from enrolling. They took ad campaigns to discourage people and confuse people. And I also think that you had states saying that they were going to punt it back to the feds to increase the task on the feds. But at the same time, I think ultimately the administration said it was ready when it knew it wasn't. And it didn't tell the American people the truth come October 1st. And so if they felt that because of the obstruction that they weren't ready to go, they should have said that. But instead they said they were ready to go and they were not.
And Trudy, you've got about 30 seconds, 45 seconds. Where are you going to be focusing your coverage?
Well, I'm going to continue to cover what I have been doing and look at both coverage, good and bad. And if you read my posts over the last several weeks, that's exactly what I've been doing. I want to make one quick point that when you're talking about blame and assessing what's happened, it's important to remember that this was basically a Republican plan. The elements of Obamacare were championed by Republicans two decades ago, and these things had been in the academic literature, the mandate, the subsidies, the penalties, etc. So I think the question has to be asked is why have the Republicans been fighting essentially against their own plan?
And that's Trudy Lieberman. She's a contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review, where she critiques press coverage of health care. She joined us from Canada. Charles Ornstein is a senior reporter with ProPublica. He's past board president of the Association of Healthcare Journalists. Thank you both for joining us. We're going to put links to all of your work and to all of the information that you heard today at yourcallradio.org. I want to thank everybody who called. I apologize that we couldn't get to everybody. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. How is Israeli society and its politics changing? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with award-winning investigative journalist Max Blumenthal about his new book, Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. He writes about political forces and influential personalities who have shaped life in Israel and the implications for the occupied territories. What do you want to know about Israel and Palestine? Join the conversation and call in with your questions on the next Your Call with Matt Martin and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco, with special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. Yeah.